even her experience prepared her for this, yet it was real. Says Taylor, resurrection is a miracle of another order. There is no continuity with life as we know it. The spark is utterly extinguished. The heart stops. The legs curl up for good. Death occurs beyond a shadow of a doubt. The living withdraw to get on with their lives, and the silence is complete. Then, when everything is over, something entirely new begins. What was cold becomes warm again, and what lay still sits up. Creation occurs all over again. Not a spark rescued from the ashes, but a whole new fire kindled out of nothing. The gracious act of the one who can make life out of dust, not just once upon a time, or even at the end of time, but over and over again. Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our heart be acceptable to you this day, O God. Amen. On behalf of Fellowship Congregational Church, I bring you greetings. We enjoy getting to know your College Hill youth through Unity Youth, and we appreciate being a sister congregation. And many thanks to John Gammy and the College Hill worship team for inviting me to be with you today. John's specific request was that I preach a post-Easter resurrection domestic violence sermon. He heard me give at Fellowship Congregational Church in April during Sexual Assault Awareness Month. John was part of a College Hill delegation that came to Fellowship that Sunday, along with representatives from the Equality Center and the Islamic Association, to stand in solidarity with Fellowship and to create safe space for Fellowship children. While John and company were out on the sidewalk singing John Lennon's All We Need Is Love from under rainbow-colored umbrellas, demonstrators were on the streets, hurling megaphone-enhanced scriptures, soul-damning insults, and judgment. It was a memorable Sunday. Needless to say, the request to preach that post-resurrection Easter redo sermon in November, in recognition of October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the first Sunday after an historic national election, one Sunday from the realm of Christ, gave me pause. Just preach the same sermon. It should be easy, right? No, it's not. It's a thorny challenge, much like being called to love one another. Every single other. Those standing on the sidewalk under the rainbow umbrellas, and those standing on the street corner with the megaphones. The complexities remind me of the look I get when women ask me what I do, and I tell them I teach domestic violence awareness classes at David L. Moss, the county jail. I see their eyebrows narrow, the crease in their forehead, and I wonder, is it the domestic violence part? Is it the jail part? Or is it the white hair? Something doesn't compute. All kinds of boundaries seem to blur. It's the reality I encounter when I hear the stories of the people of the jail. Unpaid traffic fines, unpaid child support, addictions, mental health issues, neglect, failure to protect, assault, charges that are possible, probable, some questionable, some unbelievable. What I thought was simply break the law and you go to jail becomes complicated, And I'm left wondering, do we call them criminals, inmates, prisoners, students, clients, patients, perpetrators, victims, congregants, children of God? It's a daunting thought. And there we go with the Psalm's assurance that we go with the God who brings life from the ashes, life, joy from the nights of tears, and turns mourning into dancing. So it is no wonder that the 213th General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church USA chose Psalm 30, our text for this morning, to recreate a resource on domestic violence called Turn Mourning into Dancing, a policy statement on healing domestic violence. The goal of the resource was to renew Presbyterian understandings concerning the root causes of domestic violence and the church's complicity and response to the problem. That's a quote. Today, we are about that work of understanding domestic violence, the church's complicity, and our response as a faith community. So, what is domestic violence, and what do we know? Domestic violence is the emotional, physical, and/or sexual abuse by an intimate partner or ex-intimate partner for the purpose of power and control. And much like the anonymous poet of the psalm, victims of violence could be anyone. Women or men, young or old, any race, any gender identity, any socioeconomic group. In the jail population, most of the women we see are victims of violence. Of the 22 women in class on Friday, 19 said that they had grown up in violence. One woman summed it up like this: I watched my parents fight. That's all I knew. And when I got old enough to ask questions, my mother looked at me and she said, "You fight for what you love." I believed her. Somewhere along the way, the lines between love and violence blurred. Now, the research is in, and it's very clear. 60% of the women we incarcerate in Oklahoma are victims of sexual assault as children. 90% are victims of domestic violence as adults. And many will claim to be perpetrators of the violence. Most of our students believe that the partner who ranted and raved all day because there was a dirty fork in the silverware drawer was just having a bad day. Or the choke around the neck will never happen again. Or the put downs are just part of being in relationship. Or the look is just part of love. Yet the victims of violence who we know from the jail are real people, as real as the people on the outside. And you and I have seen them. We've seen them waiting at the bus stop. We encounter them as the parent of our children's friends. She was the waitress taking my order, perhaps a family member, a friend sitting next to you in the pew. Lonely, isolated, living in fear and chaos. It's what the psalmist describes as the pit. For ancients, the pit was not hell. Such an idea did not exist. The pit was simply death. Sometimes it's difficult for us to see what's all around us. Things not of our world just don't exist. Such an experience happened about 10 years ago when Tulsa Metropolitan Ministry offered resources and information on domestic violence. TMM was working with the Family Safety Center, and they knew from the chaplain's statistics that people of the faith community entered their doors seeking emergency protective orders. TMM also knew where those survivors of domestic violence worship, So as a service to the faith community, TMM offered information and resources on domestic violence. The mailing list was some 500 faith communities. Guess how many responded? 5. When the follow-up inquiry went out, here's what most of those congregations said. We don't need that. Domestic violence doesn't exist here. Sometimes it's difficult for us to see what is all around us. We deny, we minimize, we find it easier to ignore or even blame, to work hard to make things better. The women of the jail say that some churches just don't want to look bad. Those people aren't a part of us. For whatever reasons, we fail to see or hear until we see something in a different way, like a dead spider on the windowsill that comes back to life. Or until we hold the story of a woman who was trafficked as a teen and now faces 30 years in prison. Sometimes we need to see in a different way or to hold a new reality in our hearts to help us make the connections, to help us understand things that seem surreal. Those surviving in homes of domestic violence need awareness. Many may not even know that they're in domestic violence. And those of us in the faith community need to pay attention. We need to be the messengers of awareness. The truth is this: we can't change anything. We can't change perpetrators. We can't tell a victim to leave. We can be present. We can be voices of awareness. We can say to the abused, I believe your story. It's not your fault. You deserve better than this. I'm afraid for your safety and the safety of your children. I'm here for you. And what about perpetrators of domestic violence? According to Annie O'Dell, a sergeant in the Seattle Police Department, there are 5 reasons that explain perpetrators. First, we live in a patriarchal cultural value system. It's a culture that does not value the work of women as much as men, where women receive unequal pay from Silicon Valley to Wall Street law firms. It's a culture where media treats women as objects. And we are a culture that gives men social permission to use power, intimidation, and violence to control their subordinates, their wives, their children. If abusers' actions were public, let's say they acted toward their boss the same way they treat an intimate partner, their actions would be totally unacceptable. And although women can be batterers as well as men, the vast majority of those killed in domestic violence relationships are women. 1, we live in a patriarchal society. It's just in the water. 2, when we fail to confront or we ignore the batterer's violent behavior, we allow and enable the abuse to continue. When the organizations we trust are silent, law enforcement, faith communities, schools, our own families, when we are silent, we're saying that violence is okay, and we become part of the problem. The 2016 Academy Award winner for the Best Picture, Spotlight, A True Story of Intimate Violence, made the sin of silence all too clear. 3, family of origin, According to the Family Violence Prevention Fund, boys exposed to their parents' domestic violence are twice as likely to grow up and abuse their wives as sons of nonviolent parents. In addition, boys who witness their father's abuse of their mothers are more likely to inflict severe violence as adults. And the data suggests that girls who witness maternal abuse may tolerate abuse as adults more than girls who do not. 4, a twisted sense of reality. My truth is truth. I define the rules. The batterer twists the event around 180 degrees in their mind, as well as their explanations to authorities who respond in the criminal justice system and in social services systems. Here's how it works. The batterer makes the rules. Once the victim breaks the rule, the batterer now feels the victim is actually the abusive one. She broke my rules. She is now to blame for whatever happens, which entitles the batterer to mete out consequences. 5, environmental stressors. They are the least important. Everyone is subject to stress, to anger, money problems, frustrations, relationship problems, the list goes on. However, most of us do not react with violence and intimidation. We find acceptable solutions. Batterers, because the first 4 pieces are in place, batterers choose to react with violence, control, intimidation, threats. Batterers are not that stupid. They select safe targets. The 5 reasons batterers abuse. And knowing all this, what is even more clear is that hurt people hurt people, male and female. And children in homes of violence grow up. We also know that abusers cannot change unless they choose to change. The issues are complex. Boundaries blur. Yet the women at the jail are about the business of becoming aware, and they will not be silenced, and they are very clear about what they want. Here's what the women of the jail taught us during Friday's class on domestic violence and religion. They will not tolerate a faith community that will not believe them, that misuses the Bible for the purpose of power and control, that blames the victim, that sees abuse as no big deal. They want their religious community to be a safe place, a community that will not judge them for their choices or for the clothes they wear, a community that will believe their stories of violence, a community of healing, a community that will honor their place as a woman in this world, a community that will welcome them just as they are and who they are. We facilitators suggest to the women that they shop around for a faith community. After all, there's one on every corner in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Look at the kiosks, bulletins, resource tables. What does this faith community support? Listen to prayers and sermons. What is important to this faith community? Look at its leadership. If there are no women in leadership roles and you are a woman, there may be a safer place for your spirit. Faith communities must be safe places for victims of domestic violence. And faith communities must hold perpetrators accountable. And in our faith communities, when relationships are so broken, they are no longer a place of safety, then faith communities must help people find a way to lament and mourn that relationship and put the pieces of life back together again. Whether we want to be or not, the church is at the front lines of the issue of domestic violence. And College Hill Presbyterian Church, you are on the front lines. You are boundary-breaking Easter people living into Christ's realm of mercy, peace, and justice. This past year, you invited Domestic Violence Intervention Services to provide healthy relation informationship for Unity Youth. For years, you have committed to value all people and to nurture leaders, regardless of gender identity, race, or age. Through Sunday school, you create safe space to talk about challenging issues. You open your pulpit. You invite people to sing under rainbow-colored umbrellas. And you pray. Boundary-breaking Easter people, living into Christ's realm of mercy, peace, and justice. It's good work. Continue to be vigilant. Be aware of the violence that may be happening around you. Have courage to be totally present. Hate'em, 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 hate'em. Hate'em, malada, hate'em, 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 malada. Hate'em, hate'em, hate'em. Hate'em, malada. Hate'em, hate'em, hate. I don't know how I, the angels, woke me up this morning soon. I don't know why the blood still runs through my veins. I don't know how I rate running this race yet another day. I'm still a running, I believe. Hate'em, malada, hate'em, hate'em, hate'em. Hate'em, malada, hate'em, hate'em, hate. Hate'em, malada, hate'em, hate'em, hate'em. I'm still here running, I believe. My God calls to me in the morning dew. The power of the universe, it knows my name. Gave me a song to sing and sent me on my way. I raise my voice for justice, I believe.